You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
We are welcoming Senior Lecturer Nick Rattenbury, who is a part of the Department of Physics at Auckland University. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on board. Really excited to be talking about something that's a little bit out of my reach and probably a lot of listeners, but it'll be interesting all the same. And I wanted to begin with, you're using a technique called microlensing to study planets, correct?
That's right. Yes, that's right. So I'm going to go for a 30-second explanation.
Yes.
All right, okay. So we live on a planet going around a star. That star is like many, all the other stars in our galaxy, rotating around the center of the galaxy. Occasionally, two stars will line up. So from our point of view on Earth, a background star, one a very distant star, and a foreground star will line up with us almost exactly. And the gravity of the foreground star between us and the background star will act like a lens. Its gravity will bend light from the background star to us here on Earth, just like an optical lens. And what we see is we see that background star apparently get brighter. So that is the basic physics of gravitational microlensing.
Crazy. And you did that very quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to ask as well, how did you get into studying microlensing, or how did you get into physics?
How did I get into physics? Well, I was fascinated by physics as a kid, really early on. So I just wanted to know how things worked, why things did the things they did, why things had colour, and how did sound work and all that sort of thing. So I was turned on to science at a very young age. I was given a telescope, I think I was about 10 years old, a really small one, and I spent ages out in the back garden late at night, you know, getting cold, but looking at the stars and the planets and getting excited about astronomy in particular.
Awesome. And then from that, you have gone on to study.
Yes. From that, school physics was a favourite subject of mine. Also English. I loved English. Maths, I'm okay at maths, I guess. But then I wanted to pursue that, came to university, got into physics. I started off in laser physics and then decided, I'm more interested in astronomy. So I changed my degree and just took a standard Bachelor of Science degree. And that just kept on going until I found that the main research in astrophysics that I could get involved in New Zealand was the project called the MOA Project. The MOA Project is the Microlensing Observations in Astrophysics Project. It's a joint Japan and New Zealand project. We have a telescope down in the South Island at beautiful Lake Tekapo.
And how big is this telescope? Because usually people think it's just like, you know, something you can whip out of your pocket and
let's say it's somewhat larger than the little telescope I had when I was 10 years old. Wow. It is the largest telescope in the country. Its main mirror is 1.8 meters across, so it's large, and it works solely on the research that we're interested in doing. It stares at the same patches of sky night after night, looking for that telltale rise in light from that lensing event that we're looking for.
And what have you found with the research you've been conducting with microlensing?
All right, so the telescope stares at millions of stars night after night. We look for a characteristic brightening, one of these stars, background stars, appearing to get brighter. It's not actually getting brighter. Remember, it's the gravity of this foreground object passing between it and us, acting like a lens. So it only appears to get brighter. It's like taking a magnifying glass and passing it between your eye and a street light or something like that. And as it moves up and gets really aligned, you see the background street light appear to get brighter. So that's kind of the thing that we're looking for. It's very, very rare, though. There's only about a 1 in a million chance for this alignment to occur in our own galaxy. And Einstein thought about this himself, so because this is a consequence of Einstein's general theory of relativity.
Okay.
He considered, if that foreground object is a massive thing, like a big galaxy of millions and millions of stars, lensing light from a distant background galaxy, fine. But he started thinking, could this happen for stars, little things on a smaller scale? And he said, the chances of this alignment in our own galaxy is so remotely small that we'd never, ever see it. So yes, but you'd never see it. But what Einstein himself couldn't have perceived was what we could do with semiconductors, creating cameras, the sort of technology we carry around in our pocket as cell phones with cameras, powerful computers. It becomes routine now that we can monitor the light from millions of stars simultaneously, analyze it, so that if we look at millions and millions of stars at the same time, that one in a million chance becomes routine. And so we often find these microlensing events. How we find planets, though, that foreground object, it isn't just a star, not necessarily just a star or a single object. It could have planets going around it. So what we see, instead of a nice, smooth, symmetric brightening of that background star and then fading away again, is we see glitches. We see extra little bumps in the light. We see the light irregularly get brighter. And that would be a signal of a planet, or hopefully a signal of a planet.
Wow.
Okay, so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for, first of all, these microlensing events to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of those events, we're looking for a little extra glitches, which could be due to an extra mass in that lensing object. It's like an extra, a second lens, if you like, in that lensing system going between us. So the star has got its gravity, mm-hmm. and our little planet going around that star has its own gravity, and they both act as little lenses, bending the light from that background object to us here on Earth. And we're looking for the effect of both of those, looking for the planets.
And what does finding these planets offer the scientists? Just like new research, or what does it lead to?
Well, you know, when I talk about my research at parties and stuff like that, the conversation very quickly turns to, do you believe in aliens?
Right.
So which I translate as, do I have confidence in that aliens exist elsewhere in our universe? Or I should say life elsewhere. And my personal view is the answer is yes. The reason is we're now discovering that the galaxy is full of planets. I mean, when I first started this research, we knew about the planets around the solar system and that were it. Now we know of thousands of planets out there in our galaxy. Now, this is not just the work that we're doing, but work that NASA, JPL, all these other folk who are launching the big telescopes, like the Kepler Space Telescope, which has done fantastic work finding planets using a different technique, but finding different types of planets. It has found thousands of planets. We are contributing by finding planets using our technique, and there are other techniques being used by people around the world. So we know that there are thousands of planets out there.
Mm.
And by looking at all the planets that we've found so far and asking ourselves, well, this is how well we've done so far, using the telescopes and the techniques that we're using presently, what that means is, given those instrumentation setups, using those telescopes and our analysis, we've found that many stars with planets, that means there must be X many planets in our galaxy, and X is very, very large. We're talking about billions of planets out there.
Yeah.
So if we're looking for life, alien life, which are our big projects around the globe looking for alien life, directly looking for their radio signals. That's not us. We're just looking for planets.
Yeah.
We like to think that the most likely form of life would be something like our own life on this planet, which is life on a planet. So the first step was find the planets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been doing. We're finding planets. And so the answer of, well, is there life out there? Well, there's certainly planets out there, and I find it hugely unlikely that...
Can life, like, vary, though? So life for us, you know, is Earth, and we're like kind of adapted to this kind of, I suppose, ecosystem. But, I mean, life on another planet might not be suited to us and our way of living. Do you get what I mean?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've got to start somewhere. We know most about life on this planet.
Mm.
It's a small, rocky planet. It's got a good atmosphere, and we think we understand how life kind of works on this planet. It's the best we can do. But there's nothing stopping us speculating about how life could exist on other planets, big gas planets, rocky planets, cold planets, water worlds, and things like that. But seeing that, understanding life on this planet itself is an extraordinarily difficult task in itself. We like to think, well, why don't we try and find a Earth too? Why don't we try and find a planet?
That's what everybody kind of thinks when you hear of scientists looking for planets, right? It's kind of, you assume they're just looking for planets which humans can adapt to.
Right. It turns out the easiest planets to find, the first planets you'd find, the easiest planets to find are larger planets. So
mm-hmm.
those are planets more like a Jupiter, more like a Saturn, and planets which orbit close to their host star. So we're talking about these massive planets orbiting really close to their host star, sort of where Mercury would orbit around our own sun, really close in. So those are the first types of planets that we started to discover. When I say we, I mean humankind, not just us, our own research group. And that put people into a bit of a spin, because those were planets very much unlike our own solar system. We don't have a Jupiter orbiting really close to our host star. So is that kind of weird. Are those planetary systems more likely out there? Is our planetary system, our solar system, weird in some way that we have this sort of range? So for a long time, people were puzzling over, well, is it just because those are the easy ones to find, or is that more just simply the most common type of planetary system out there? As we've gotten better with our techniques, as we've got better with taking data and analyzing it, we're finding planetary systems more like our own. We're finding smaller planets. We're finding planets the same mass as the Earth, orbiting at the same distance, more or less, around the host star that Earth orbits around.
Are they quite far away, though?
Most of the planets that we have heard about in the press, like from the Kepler mission and the other techniques that you read about, they're quite local. So they're within a few hundred parsecs. Never mind about the units. They're in our local neighborhood, so they're quite close to us. The technique that we use, in contrast, the Japanese New Zealand collaboration MOA uses gravitational lensing, and that technique finds planets thousands of light years away. We're talking about finding planets well away from our own solar system. Now, unfortunately, this is not a place where you can, you know, travel to particularly easily unless we change or learn a lot more about physics and have our faster than light star drives and things like that. And certainly not going to solve the Auckland housing crisis. But anyway, what it does tell us, though, is that planets form throughout the galaxy. So there's always this question of, well, if you're only looking near to you, then maybe there's something special about our part of the galaxy. Planets form for some reason. We don't know. Since we're adding planetary systems much further away from us, we're able to say, no, it seems to be that planets form around stars throughout the galaxy. So this is why we can say that there are so many planets out there, most likely.
Wow. And where is your research taking you?
All Everywhere? Sorts of places. Well, I spent nearly 10 years in the UK. Half of that doing research, half of that doing something else. I get to go to international conferences and talk about my research, meet people out there who are, you know, smarter than I am, telling me where I'm wrong and where I should go and what I should be thinking about and that sort of thing, presenting my results and getting feedback and things like that. So literally, that's where my research has taken me.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, what I do day to day, I tend to sit down and look at my computer. I try and understand what the data are trying to tell me. I try and... as a scientist, you should always be trying to prove yourself wrong, I guess. So you say, "Oh, I found a planet." Have you really? You know, no. And who would your worst enemy say? You know, what would your worst enemy say about the what you're trying to say? And you try and poke holes in your own work. So it's kind of one of these arguments you have with yourself on a day-to-day basis.
Is that because people are always going to question kind of what you've found from your research, or is there always like the potential that it's just you're just totally wrong?
Both. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that this is how science works. I mean, I do my best analysis. I put out the research and I say, this is what I do. And my conclusion is this.
Yeah.
People say, oh, from Rattenbury, you're wrong. Look, you've your logic is wrong. Your analysis is wrong. Your code's got a bug, you know, have you. So you try and do as much of that criticism yourself first. That's sometimes hard, right?
Yeah.
And that's sometimes hard. You spend 6 months working on something and then you discover a mistake and you go, oh. Back to the drawing board, start again. Or, you know, you have to say, well, the first really exciting result I thought I discovered actually turned out to be not that exciting at all. But as a scientist, you have to report as it is and say, no, there
and
you
just
go.
Keep going.
And keep going.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for coming in this morning. It's been really interesting talking with you. There's so much that I don't know.
You too.
And have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.